Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna have ya. Tanaka, Spakata, Jag, like Michael Walker, Polanco, and Franco.
Where'd you go to ask him? Get it to first place. Check Batty Baldata and swing it strike rates. Raisins are shriveled grapes. Here's Adam's happy place.
Welcome in. It is Fantasy Baseball Today. I'm Chris Welsh. That is Scott White. You were vying for championships. And Scott, you know who one of the guys that is probably going to be on a very, very high percentage of fantasy championship rosters this year? Yu Darvish. 14 strikeouts after going six innings. He had gave up two hits. He did walk two, which is the first time since he's done that since June 26. Might be one of the highest owned championship players on any roster. Yu Darvish doing the good stuff for all of us.
Good stuff. Yeah, he has emerged as an ace at the most perfect time of year. He and Jack Flaherty both, who were, you know, they had some rough times early. Jack Flaherty had an ERA approaching five, I think, in as recently as June. And of course, Darvish, we were getting asked every start if we could drop him yet. Back the way he began this season, but they both have figured it out. They both have electric stuff. Darvish now, he in his past 12 starts has a 2.71 ERA, 0.81 WHIP, 12.2 Ks per nine. I mean,
he's something else. You know, we had a question here. I'll just jump right to it real quick. We want to get into everything, by the way. Of course, we got to set you guys up for next week with all the two-start pitchers, lots and lots of ads. But you guys have also been sending in a ton of questions, so good on you. But just since we're talking about Darvish, the one thing I've been inundated is 2020 stuff. I told you, I took Darvish, the perception when I started the two early mocks had not jumped quite yet. And I got Darvish, I thought of it as a deal. Our buddy Mike in Newark says, I wasn't seriously considering keeping Darvish for next year because I have him at $24, he says. But with the second half, I'm starting to consider it because true aces go for 40-plus in his points league. He says, Darvish looks like vintage Darvish, who is a top seven pitcher. So his question is, how high can you envision ranking you if he keeps this up? Back to the top seven like the old days? Or how high do you think he can go if he keeps this up for next year?
It won't be that high. I mean, as crappy as starting pitcher is, and of course, we've been talking about that all year. We've been talking about that really for a few years now. It's pretty loaded at the top. I mean, you... strikeouts obviously have gone up as home runs have, and the pitchers who can miss bats like a Yu Darvish can. I mean, they're not in short supply. They're probably the number I've been using just kind of offhand was there's a couple dozen pitchers who are basically ace or near ace level, and I would consider him among them. But he's, you know, one of the older ones among them, and has one of the more precarious track records, so he would be on the lower end of that.
Yeah, and he hasn't been going in the early mocks. I've got one over it in this league right now we're doing, and I've been doing the two early mocks. Darvish hasn't gone inside, I don't believe, the top 20 pitchers yet in either one of those. Now, how he's finishing the year, I do think there could be maybe an argument that he could sit in that 15-ish range, especially if these last couple starts he finishes off and we see what happens with playoffs. But the thing I would say about him is, though he is not going to sit in that top 10 tier like you're talking about, the Biebers, the Flahertys, the Buehlers, stuff like that, he will probably be the biggest target, the biggest bullseye on his back of that next globbed tier where the elite guys are gone. And then everyone's like, well, I can get Darvish, you know, is my SP2 in round whatever it ends up being, 7 or 8. That's where I feel like he's going to end up being. So he'll actually maybe get drafted higher than you would think.
Well, that's what I was going to say, that, you know, it's, let's say he's not even a top 20 pitcher. He's 24th, let's say.
Yeah.
All of those guys should probably be gone, particularly in a points league, I would say, within the first six rounds, because the drop off that's coming thereafter, I mean,
it's pretty big.
Every starting pitcher sucks. He's one of the ones who doesn't, and that means a lot. So if pitchers of that caliber usually go for 40 plus in your league, then he's probably worth keeping for 24.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that easy answer for you there. And Darvish, love to hear, you know, if you guys are rocking into your championship, which could be next week, maybe the week after. If you guys are rocking Darvish, love to hear it, especially with maybe what he's done. Because I could see a lot of stories out there of people being like, well, I was in sixth place, thought I was getting out. Then all of a sudden Darvish came through the last 2 months. So Yu Darvish, 14
sounds
strikeouts.
Like a hurricane.
Yeah, he does. It does. 14 strikeouts leading into what could be your championship next week, which is pretty, pretty good. But speaking of championships, we've got to get you guys prepared right at the top here. Two start pitchers. That is the flavor. That is the choice we're going to go to. I'm going to throw it to Scott here in a second to get your picks, but without getting trampled over with potentially players you're going to pick, I'm going to throw four at you that are in the relative range. Call them fringy, call them the mid-tier two-start pitchers, because ironically, I don't believe, and maybe you'll be able to correct me when we get to your picks here, I'm not sure there's a lot of deep options because I went through them and they don't look great. So here are four mid-tier two-start pitchers for next week that I want to get your take on. Zach Plesac, who is 74% owned in CBS, but my counter argument here, I went to another site to take a look, only 32% owned, just to reference for a lot of people listening.
The percentages are always much higher on CBS, at
Absolutely.
Least compared to the other big boys.
Absolutely. And Plesac is one I just wanted to be in this conversation. So that was my reference for all of you guys here. Detroit and Philly next week. Number two, John Means Business, 62% Detroit and Seattle. You've got Martin Perez, who's 54% owned. He's got the White Sox in Kansas City. And Zach Davies, who's 59% owned, has the Padres in Pittsburgh. Those are all pretty, pretty ideal matchups for the mid-tier players that might be sitting out there for you. Zach Plesac got used against me this week in one of my leagues. So, Plesac, Means, Perez, Davies, how do you deal with this group?
Well, John Means is my favorite, and I should preface that by saying this time a week ago we were talking about him as a two-star pitcher. Obviously, it didn't happen. And that's something this time of year more than ever you have to factor in if you're going to go with a low-end pickup and with the hope he's making two starts, or that's the only reason you're doing it, then you might want to think about that twice.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that too, as I had a couple questions really early in the week of people being like, hey, I've got my bye week coming up. I really want to get some preemptive moves for the next week. You know, who are some maybe two starts and stuff I should be looking at? And I said, well, here's my first piece of advice. Just wait here for a second, because the amount of volatility that can happen here where a guy gets moved up, gets moved back, gets a start skipped. And if these acquisitions are really low, between three and four ads in a week, you want to wait till you're a little bit closer. Just because you have the week off doesn't mean you need to go make those moves on Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with making them, but with the understanding you may have to remake them before it's all over. And it still may be wrong. I mean, you know, the Orioles could just insert a spot starter in the middle of the next week and suddenly Means isn't making two starts anymore.
They're Orioles, sure.
But hypothetically, John Means, two incredible matchups, Detroit and Seattle. He's coming off four consecutive quality starts. I've been pretty dismissive of him all year. And so I was trying to find reasons not to be. I mean, his fly ball rate is extreme. And
I don't think your cat likes John Means. I just want to point that out here. I just
you hear him meowing in the background?
I just want to make sure. That might be an omen. So I'm just prefacing everybody. There might be an omen on John Means, as Scott White's cat is very, very upset about it.
It's been a long time since he's made an appearance on the podcast, so I know people will appreciate that. But John Means, what I found is his ex-WOBA, not just his WOBA, but his ex-WOBA as well, is below 300. And if you don't know about WOBA, it's weighted like OBP. So under 300, really bad, really bad. So the quality of contact he's giving up supports what he's doing. Now, I still have my doubts, but I think that's the strongest argument I could make for him actually being a quality pitcher is that, and, you know, good run, good matchups. I think he's my first choice here.
What about a guy like Martin Perez, who, I mean, his last start against the Washington Nationals wasn't fantastic. I mean, he's had a couple duds in there, but his last start against the White Sox, he went six, gave up three, struck out four, and the Royals wasn't a great one, but the matchups look pretty solid with a good offense behind him.
Yeah. Yeah, I could justify it in a points league because the matchups White Sox Royals so good. The offense, like you said, it helps him get a win. He's pretty up and down. He's pretty up and down, and his good starts aren't even that good. But in a points league, you could take a hit more on your on the ERA and WHIP, and in the hope of getting more innings, hopefully getting a win. I can justify it in a points league. I can justify Plesac in a points league too. And you know I don't like Plesac. He at least has one good matchup against the Tigers this week. I wouldn't risk it in a categories league, not unless I was really chasing in wins.
Not against Detroit, or you mean the two starts?
For the two start week.
But Detroit, I like the Detroit one actually a lot. Oh, yeah, but I'm not touching Philly.
That's why I could justify it at all. If it was Philadelphia, Washington this week, I wouldn't be doing it. But yeah, Detroit, Philadelphia, in a points league, I could see going with Zach Plesac.
So who else do you got on your two starts for this coming week that you would like to monitor? I do have two that we might be worried about, technically three, but do you have any names that might be lower owned than these guys that you are recommending? Or are they all in the thanks but no thanks? Because it's not
lower
pretty.
Owned? I'm not sure about lower owned, but Kyle Gibson is less than 60% owned on CBS, and his matchups are White Sox Royals, just like Martin Perez. I think he's a better pitcher than Martin Perez. He just returned from the IL, did not have a good start today against Washington, obviously a tough matchup, but you know, Gibson's been pretty shaky. You know, he didn't miss that much time with injury, but he was shaky before going on the IL, and it's risky, but all of these guys we're talking about are risky. And I think, you know, he's at least a pretty good bat misser and has two great matchups. So Kyle Gibson would be in the two start sleeper discussion. The most interesting two start pitcher of all we haven't mentioned yet, and that is Luis Severino.
I was just looking and I saw him, like, wow, they really listed him as the two starter. I don't know how much those are, like, maybe both combined outings might be one actual start. Like, do you think he actually gets two full quote starts?
I think so. His most recent rehab start, I believe it was on Wednesday. He threw 64 pitches, only went 3 2/3 inning. It wasn't a great start, but he threw 64 pitches.
He did.
So I'm thinking 75 next time out. You know, if it's a good start, 75 could carry him through five.
I mean, he could be like Cueto, to your point. I mean, 47 strikes he threw in the game. He was solid. I mean, it was good Severino stuff. So to your point, maybe he just pulls a Cueto where if he's efficient enough, he could go five.
Yeah. And that first start is against the Angels. Okay.
It's fine.
He gets through that. 90 pitches maybe the next time out is possible. 85?
Maybe.
That's against the Blue Jays, that second start. So, and he's Luis Severino. Like, you expect him, it's more likely he's going to be good than not.
I saw some of the video. Look good. Look like vintage Luis Severino. He's still getting his bearings under him. I mean, do you view Luis Severino in a start as risky as, like, when I put Johnny Cueto in both of the leagues I'm currently going in keeper leagues this week, I started Johnny Cueto on that Tuesday start, and that, I think, was viewed a little bit risky, especially early on with ratios.
It's definitely risky.
Yeah,
do you think I was scared to death of that recommendation?
Yeah. You preface it. You're like, he's the best two starter, but that doesn't say a whole lot. It's scary. But is Severino in that same camp, or is because his talent's so immense? Like, hey, listen, man, you just get him out there.
Johnny Cueto is a pretty good pitcher. Luis Severino is an ace. That's what we know him to be. We haven't seen him pitch at all this year, and everybody, you know, it's risky just because he's coming back from a severe injury, you know, and we don't know how close he is to quote unquote midseason form. He kind of hurried back. I'm not saying it's not scary, but if we're just looking at this objectively, he's a better pitcher than Cueto, right? And on a better team, he doesn't have two great matchups like Cueto did, but he has one. One of the two matchups is a great one. So I think if you were willing to roll the dice on Cueto, you should be on Severino too.
Would you
that
put him
being
out?
Said,
your championship. I mean, you have a championship. You are September 17th. It is championship week, whether it goes for 1 or 2 weeks. Are you putting Luis Severino in your lineup?
I mean, I'm not giving a flat yes. I mean, a lot of teams in their championship game have deep rotations with great pitchers throughout. It's not automatic, but if you're struggling to fill that spot rather than turn to the waiver wire, Severino might be your best bet. I got to mention, too, he could pull a Cueto in that he's in line for two starts now. You know, Cueto's not going to end up getting those two starts this week. His second start was pushed back to Tuesday of next week.
So. Oh, I didn't even see that. I thought he was still aligned for a lot of sites. Still have him aligned.
Yeah,
for
a lot
Monday,
of sites have
Sunday.
I just found that out before the podcast, so I gotta make some adjustments to my projected starters. But there was a report out yesterday or on Wednesday that Cueto's next start was pushed back to Tuesday. So, you know, the Yankees have Jordan Montgomery coming back Sunday to make a short start. They did just lose Jay Happ today. It seems like Domingo Herman they're kind of transitioning to him a relief role. He piggybacked off of a CC Sabathia start today. So in theory,
I wonder if those two are going to keep doing that, by the way.
Herman, I don't know. I don't know. But in theory, you can subtract Herman and Happ, add Severino and Montgomery, still a 5-man rotation. Severino still making two starts, but it's September, man. Things get crazy.
I like it. It's September, man. It is what it is. You're right about that. How about before we stop here for a second, two potential starters, though I'm piggybacking two guys on the same team. Are you worried about these two starts next week? Two St. Louis Cardinals pitchers, Dakota Hudson and Miles Mikolas, they both have the Cubs and the Reds next week. Mikolas did not, you know what, I shouldn't say that. He was actually fine in Colorado. I didn't start him. I had him in the league. I benched him because he was at Colorado. Do you have concerns about putting those guys out? I mean, weekly. I guess you could talk in weekly, or is there a start that you're sitting them both?
They're not automatics, but they're both recommended for this week just because I think they're of a high enough caliber. Dakota Hudson, for not being a big mass bat misser, for being a guy who issues a lot of walks. I mean, he's such an extreme ground ball pitcher. It's hard to assess him, but he continues to crank out just terrific start after terrific start. And I'd have a hard time benching him right now. Mikolas, and it's Mikolas, by the way, not Mikolas. I'm just gonna correct you whenever I hear it, because you appreciate that, right? Or no?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Didn't even hear that I said Mikolas. You know what it is too? If everybody remember Nick Schwartzen, the old bit where he goes, Mikolas, you're the strongest boy in the world. If everybody remembers that old comic bit, that's where I get that from. Mikolas. Sorry, I didn't even realize I said it.
It's all right.
Only the deep comedy people are gonna remember that old Nick Schwartzen bit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been kind of fringy all year, but Mikolas has, but he's kind of in that boring pitcher class where, you know, whenever he's making two starts, you're probably going to start him.
What, this chair, Grandma? All right. What about Matthew Boyd? Very highly owned. Cleveland and the White Sox. Went 5, 2 earned runs, walked 4, and struck out 3 on Thursday. Concern next week?
Most importantly, he allowed 2 home runs, so it was, again, not a great start for him. There hasn't been many good ones lately because he's so home run prone. It's less than automatic, but one of the starts being against the White Sox, I think most people should run with him.
All right, here is maybe the most important thing I ask you in this episode. Did you get your butcher box?
Oh, did I?
Did you
I got it.
Get it?
Yes, my freezer is full of meat, and I can't wait to dig into it.
Let me tell you something. This thing is unreal. ButcherBox.com/FBT or promo code FBT. So I found out that we were getting a ButcherBox. I personally love subscription services, and this one blows my mind. So knock at the door. Wife is there. She goes to the door. I hear a, can you help me? I'm like, okay, it's just a package. Giant box, ButcherBox. Open this bad boy up. There is everything. Steak, pork, bacon, and to my wife's excitement, organic chicken. To my excitement, organic free-range chicken that I don't have to hunt down at a health food store, which is literally at the bottom of my favorite things to do, 1,000%. This is high-quality everything, all hormone and antibiotic-free. So, to the uninitiated, here's how it works. Each box contains around 9 to 11 pounds of meat. Enough for 24 meals. Yeah, 24. Think about this. 24 high-quality meals that come out to like $6 a meal. It's packed fresh, frozen, and vacuum-sealed, so you don't have to freak out if you don't answer the door like we did. You know, I'm in Arizona, so I was kind of a little bit more, you know, like, how is this exactly going to work? No, that thing is on lockdown. You can customize your box, or you can go with theirs. Options like 100% grass-fed and finished beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage pork, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, and sugar nitrate-free bacon. Right now, ButcherBox is offering new members ground beef for life. That's 2 pounds of ground beef in every box for life of their subscription, plus $20 off their first box. Just go to butcherbox.com/FBT or enter promo code FBT at checkout. Better for you, better for the animal, and better for the environment. That's butcherbox.com/FBT or enter promo code FBT at checkout. Besides ButcherBox, who is your Thursday standout here, Scott White?
My Thursday standout is right on the tip of my tongue, let me tell you. I'm going to go with I'm going to mention Luke Voit here because I was getting a little worried about Luke Voit. He hadn't homered since he returned. Well, that changed. He had a three-hit game with a homer and a double. First game of a doubleheader, got another hit in the second game of the doubleheader. And Edwin Encarnacion is he left the first game with an injury. He's going to be sidelined for a few days. So even if the Yankees were tempted to get Mike Ford in the lineup more, you know, Voit's getting hot at the right time. He looks like he still has a nice firm hold on that job, and like he could be a useful contributor down the stretch.
Did anybody have a worse Thursday than the Yankees? I mean, I guess I got the positive Severino news, but E5, like you said, he left with an oblique strain. They lost Hap. Gary Sanchez was forced to leave the second game of the doubleheader with left groin tightness. It was rough, but Voit was, you know, he was one of the positive standouts there. I think 4 hits between the two games. So you're in.
Yep.
You are in. How about a hey real quick on the emails? Hey, real quick, Lux or Cano as my second baseman in point leagues rest of season?
I am going to say that you should go with Lux.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Really? I've got some debates. Let me find them real quick because I have got a couple that I want to throw at you then here because we've jumped to both of them. I just have to do it now. Do I need to be owned? Robinson Cano is the lowest percent owned of these players, but he did hit his 13th homer on Thursday. 2 homers and 8 hits coming into Thursday. And Gavin Lux, by the way, who's 63% owned, since September 2nd only has his third game with a hit, 1-for-4, but he did get his first stolen base. These guys are in different territory. But guys like Colton Wong, who hit his 11th homer, had 2 stolen bases, which is his 22nd. You've got J.D. Davis, who was 2-for-3. Next week, he has no game on Thursday, but Colorado and Cincinnati. And Kevin Biggio, who went 3-for-4 with a triple on a 3-game hit streak. So Cano, Biggio, Davis, Wong, Lux. You took Lux, who is the highest owned of all of those guys.
Yeah.
But Wong.
No, I'm rethinking things here. Rethinking things. You know, obviously, if this was like June 1st and we were playing the long game, I think you'd pursue the upside of Lux.
1,000%.
But it's not. It's 2 weeks to go. And Cano's been hot. And they definitely have, the Mets definitely have better matchups than the Dodgers next week. They're in line to face 6 righties. Dodgers have only 5 games and, you know, 3 of them are against quality pitchers. So Lux does not look like a good start next week. Cano at least looks like a decent one. If your league plays the last week, we'll worry about it then.
Okay, so we're going to go with Cano. Jumping back into the other things, I thought it was interesting when I was going through these, do they need to be owned guys? I mean, your guy J.D. Davis, you know, he doesn't have that game on Thursday, but just incredible at Colorado and at Cincinnati. And Colton Wong has really been studly, you know, 11 homers, 22 stolen bases, but he's got Washington and Chicago next week. If you were Canoeing versus Davis and Wong, does Cano go to the bottom of the list?
I am not so sure about that. I don't like the Cardinals matchups next week, so I would take Cano over Wong then. And Davis has kind of fallen into a bit of a platoon role here. With Cano returning, actually, that's kind of what started it.
Yeah.
Jeff McNeil playing a lot of left field and Davis goes to the bench those days. You know, the fact the Mets don't have any lefties on the schedule next week, I think, really hurts Davis's chances of making a worthwhile contribution. Sad as it makes me.
It is kind of sad. I 1,000% associate J.D. Davis with Scott White. Every time I see him, I think about you. So should be proud. You should be very happy. I think that's an honor, to be honest with you.
I like being associated with players as long as they're good.
Yeah, as long as they're not garbage, you know.
Yeah.
Like you know, my buddy Scott Bogman with Billy Burns. Like that's not the best
Billy
thing.
Burns.
Billy Burns.
Haven't had a Billy Burns.
Oh, we talk about Billy every time we can. Josh from Brussels. He had a long email that I had to condense here, but he has a dilemma regarding my closers because, hey, this is a, hey, real quick email. He feels he should go and pick up Seth Lugo, but he's trying to decide, should he drop Will Smith, Craig Kimbrell, or should he just sit tight? You have a pain look on your face. Scott White is in pain.
Painful question because Kimbrell and Smith are both in pain right now, right?
Yeah.
Like literal pain. But
someone help.
Indefinite timetables and, you know, all things being equal, I'd rather have them. So that's, I think Will Smith, he, I think is closer to being ready and obviously has been a lot more stable than Kimbrell this year. But I can see dropping Kimbrell for Lugo right now if you can't afford to wait it out.
Rosinda, Zach Wheeler, and Zach Gallen. Who do we trust more for the rest of the playoff? They meant the fantasy playoffs, but said playoff fantasy for the fantasy playoffs. Wheeler or Gallen?
That's pretty close. I trust both, to be honest. But if you're forcing me to pick one, I'm looking ahead at the matchups. Let me see here. Wheeler misses a series at Colorado next week, so that's good. Meanwhile, Gallen is facing, looks like the Padres. So for next week, I would prefer Gallen.
And that's about, I mean, then you got one more week after this. So, I mean, that's, yep. It's 50% of it. I agree. I'm going Zach Gallen. And finally, on some Hey Real Quicks, Mason says, is Wade Miley broken? What's he doing differently that's caused the wheels to fall off? He's broken, Scott.
Yeah, something is broken there. I think it's fair to say he'd been a major overachiever all year, but, you know, the two starts that bad in a row. He's doing something wrong. He doesn't think he's tipping his pitches, but you know, if he hasn't figured out what it is, I don't have an answer for it yet, but I need to see some much better results before I think about using him again. And obviously,
and that means 2020.
Probably. I mean, if he goes six strong, if he throws 6 one-hit innings next time out, I'm not going to say no to him for the final week necessarily, but yeah, he needs a really strong start next time out.
All right, quick break right here on Fantasy Baseball Today. When we come back, it is hitters. We're adding all the players. We've got the news and notes. We'll see if we can get to some 2020 talk and lots of emails. So quick break on Fantasy Baseball Today.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let TruGreen take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust TruGreen to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Most added hitters over the last week. I've got three for you. Really interesting names. I mean, there's one that's obvious. So if you've got any specific takes on them, just throw them at me here. Here are your three hitters that were added the most this week. Tommy Edman went from 30 to 46% owned. He was at the very top of hitters. Will Myers, who we spent a lot of time talking about, 48 to 64% owned. And Starlin Castro, 34 to 48% owned. Those were your three highest CBS moved hitters as far as trajectory of percent owned. So, I mean, I feel like Will Myers has gotten into a space where we were just talking about guys like Lux and Robbie Cano. I think Will Myers sits at near the top of that list of players. So I feel like that's a pretty easy thing to tackle. But what about Edman or Castro? Any thoughts here?
I would not be that invested in them. If Starlin Castro, the Marlins had good matchups going into this week, so he was among my top sleeper hitters for the week. But he doesn't have, he doesn't have a lot of upside. I don't love their matchups next week. Edman, say the same thing for him. Myers is the one to take here. The other two seem like no more than desperation plays. I would take a Robbie Cano over either, or Nick Solak still widely available. Somebody like that.
Actually,
the Rangers have the very worst matchups of any team next week, so forget the Solak pick.
Well, speaking of Nick Solak, though, how about some prospects who rake here? I have got four names for you, and I would like an order in a trust rest of season. Nick Solak is one of them, 23% owned. As we are going, we've got two games that are in progress, so that game is ended. Last I updated, I'll look here in a second. Solak was 2-for-3, but did hit his fourth homer. He was hitting .347 with two homers coming into Thursday through the month of September. We've already talked about Gavin Lux, who, 1-for-4 tonight, had his first stolen base, kind of struggled a little bit. Two others, though. Nico Horner, 1-for-4, but he's got hits in three of his first four games. He is 12% owned. And oh my, Mr. Kyle Lewis, who, as we record this, has hit his third homer, which is three straight major league games with a home run, and he's hitting fifth. He was hitting fifth here on Thursday. So Kyle Lewis, who is the lowest percent of all of them, three straight games with a home run, hitting at a very good spot in the lineup versus Gavin Lux, versus Solak, versus Horner. What do you think?
I think that this conversation would be very different if we were having it in June than right now, as I keep reiterating.
Can I take a guess real quick? If this was June, this would be Lux, Horner, Solak, Lewis for you.
No, not quite. I would go Lux, Solak, Horner, Lewis.
Okay, so Solak over. Okay, so I just have those mixed.
Is going to be believing for me with Horner and the power, considering he only had three home runs in the minors this year and about half a season's worth of at bats. That's, I mean, that raises some concerns, but, and the fact that, you know, does he have just the triple as an extra base hit so far? And it was kind of a ground ball down the left field line. You said he hits safely in three straight games to begin the season.
Three of four.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, Lewis, I wasn't counting on much of an impact from him. The power numbers were lacking, and he even got some time. Actually, I don't think he got some time at AAA, just a AA. So that helps. But he had 11 home runs and 457 at-bats there with 152 strikeouts. .398 slugging percentage. I wasn't expecting him to begin his career with a home run in three straight games. Now, I mean, there have been a lot of players over the years who underwhelmed with the power numbers in the minors. They get in the major league environment. They're seeing a lot more strikes. Suddenly their skills begin to play up. That's happened a lot. And maybe Lewis is one of those guys. I like the Mariners matchups next week. I don't like the Rangers and Solak. You know, otherwise he would be a good choice. I mentioned I don't like the Dodgers either. So that's not good for Lux. And I just don't have a lot of faith in Horner being a significant contributor at this stage of his career. So I think Lewis is the only one I'm looking at right now. Haven't put together my top 10 sleeper hitters for the upcoming week yet, but he'll be under consideration there.
Yeah, by the way, he is 3-for-3 tonight with two runs. He's got he's a triple shy of the cycle, actually, as we're recording this in the bottom of the sixth. Single, double, and he hit his third home run. So he's going to appear at the top of the list. What I think is interesting, by the way, and I know these guys are all lowly owned here, but there is a sense of desperation that sits in. And there's also, you know, there's a stage that's been set this season with guys like Aquino, you know, with come on the scene, absolutely rake and carry a team. And at this stage in the season, I do believe a lot of people are looking and banking on their teams being carried. So, yes, I know these guys are highly they're not highly owned. Yes, it's hard to get into crazy sample sizes at this time, but I think it's important to talk about, and very succinctly you did all of that, that people are going to be tempted to pick up these guys when they see, you know, Solak hit his fourth homer, and they're going to cut some really good players that might be on a, you know, two or three game hitless streak, because people are not sitting around and having any of it right now. So it's about weeding through who's the guy that you truly could take that chance on. You and I are a little bit different than that, Scott. Your eyes you just gave me were kind of like, well, but like, it is what people do.
Oh, it is what people do. Yes, I am. Generally speaking, a trust the guys who got you there thing, trust the guys who got you there kind of guy. because, you know, a couple hitless games wouldn't at all sway us in June. And it shouldn't now either. I mean, that's baseball. That's what you signed up for. And it's meaningless in the grand scheme of things. Guy could have four hits and two home runs tomorrow. So you're talking a true stud, unless he's in like a multi-week long slump, which off the top of my head, I can't think of somebody who's in that bad of a spot. Josh Bell's kind of bounced back from his slump, so I'm not worried about him. I don't know. Do you think of anybody top of mind?
Yeah, I'm trying to see if I can. What'd you say, over the last like week or 2 weeks?
Well, I said 6 weeks, but it doesn't necessarily have to be quite that long. But, you know, basically that caliber of hitter, a Josh Bell caliber, the guys who the studs, you know what a stud is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking right here.
I'm not benching my studs if they're healthy and they're not doing anything epically terrible over an extended period of time. I'm not replacing them. I'm just trusting them.
Here's a crazy example for you. But just for argument's sake here, like a guy like Andrew Benintendi right now, who in the last 2 weeks is 1-for-19 with one stolen base, one run and one RBI, and went 0-for-4 here. He's had one hit from essentially since September 4th to now. He has had one hit. He is on a cooler, if you will.
Yeah.
I think there's a set of people that will look at that and say, I'm done. I got a week left. I got 2 weeks left. Kyle Lewis just hit his third homer in 3 days and is 3-for-3 right now. Andrew Benintendi, see ya. Is that something you could stomach?
Well, it's an interesting example you picked, because I think Andrew Benintendi has fallen below that stud level this year. It's been a very disappointing season overall. Both the power and speed production have been well below expectations. He's kind of been a glorified Nick Markakis, really. So,
oh man, that stinks.
I think that's perfectly fine. In a three outfielder league, it's probably not the first time you've benched Benintendi. Five outfielder league, I don't know, it might be tougher. There's a good chance Kyle Lewis isn't even available to you then.
I just got Benintendi in the sixth round of our ITL 12 team mock draft. And I got Blackman in the fifth. So, I mean, if you want to talk about like where the sentiment is on Andrew Benintendi at this point, whether it's for the next 2 weeks where you just said there might be a scenario where you cut him for Kyle Lewis, also into next year, values are going to be plummeted, especially if you stick Nick Markakis stuff on him for the rest of the way. People are going to, we're going to cool on Benintendi, which, you know, might be deserved so. All right, let's keep going here. Jesus Luzardo, we got a couple people that really want us to talk about him. I'm not sure there's too much crazy to go with, because I believe it's more of a 2020 thing. He didn't get a start. You want to talk about things being flipped on their head, by the way. Justin Dunn, he ended up getting a start, you know, quote start, which was going to be relatively low with the Mariners. Jesus Luzardo not. Dunn got absolutely shellacked with five earned runs. But a guy like Luzardo,
five walks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Only two earned runs, but five.
That's what it was. Five walks, two earned runs. But Luzardo looked great in his outing. Three innings, gave up one earned run, two strikeouts. You got to see all the stuff that he was working with, that two seamer sliding in low. He's just a super smart pitcher. So we had a couple people asking just about our thoughts on him. I'm all in for next year, but do you have anything to take away maybe for the rest of this year or into next for Luzardo?
Yeah, I don't think you can count on him making any kind of worthwhile impact this year. It's possible he gets a spot start down the stretch when they're trying to space out their rotation for a playoff scenario. It was definitely, like, his stuff is GIF-worthy. It was, you know, everybody was raving about how good he looked. And, yeah, I think he'll be somebody who, you know, he's not going to be among those couple dozen pitchers who we think of as aces or close to it, but he'll be among the earliest to go after they're off the board. And, you know, potentially with a rotation spot from the get-go at the latest, you know, by the end of April. So, yeah, he's going to be Jesus Luzardo, I think, is his debut. You know, obviously just a drop in the bucket, but it validated everything we've been saying about him so far.
Well, if he's not a value for you maybe through the rest of this year, maybe some of these guys will be. The most added pitchers over the last week, here are your three. Johnny Cueto, who we talked about, who's up to 44% from 21. And we got the news that you said that he's been moved apparently to Tuesday, not that Miami Sunday start, which would have been great. Alex Young, who 43% to 57%, though he didn't have, he had a really weird start. He only went 2 2/3, which is not good. 6 hits, gave up 6 runs, but only 1 was earned. So it probably saved a lot of people. 3 strikeouts. He's got Miami next week. And Reynaldo Lopez, who is actually a 2-starter next week, 47 to 56% owned. And what I thought was interesting about that, Scott, is it looked like Reynaldo Lopez, I assume those numbers of why he was the third most added pitcher were just simply about 2 starts. So that was the pitcher that people were jumping on at high volumes as one of their top two starters for next week, because he's got Minnesota and Detroit.
Well, he was also coming off that that brilliant start where he threw a complete game. I believe he gave up only 2 hits, right?
That sounds right.
Yeah, it was a dominant outing, and we spoke pretty highly of him on the podcast after it, so I'm not surprised people rushed out to add him. You know, then in typical Reynaldo Lopez fashion, he follows it up with a stinker, and how much can you trust him, really? I mean, we're looking at polar opposites as far as the matchups goes this upcoming week, Minnesota and Detroit. I'd rather not have to rely on him, but
a lot of people are, though.
In a points league context, I think it makes sense to.
Did you lose any trust in Alex Young? Matchup is good next week.
Yeah,
the runs, thank God they weren't earned. But this was one of those matchups where you looked at and we were just like, yeah, I think I even looked at it. I was like, man, Diamondbacks are getting shellacked. I kind of like this as the bounce back game for Alex Young. And it was a stinker. So level of trust next week.
I mean, it's a great matchup, Miami.
Yeah, man.
And I don't think you'd be wrong to play him, but I don't know. It doesn't feel great because I really endorsed him for the first time after his last start, a 2-hit effort where he struck out 12 in 8 innings and his swinging strike rate had risen to higher than Clayton Kershaw's for the season. And yeah, it just looked like it was getting to be too much to ignore. But I don't know. I think it's a more likely chance than not he's not a great pitcher, and things could go bad for him even against Miami.
Alex Young against Miami or Reynaldo Lopez against Detroit. If you could only pick one of those starts next week,
it'd be Lopez against Detroit.
Okay. That says, I think, a lot about Alex Young at this point, because, I mean, I guess they're both really great matchups, but Alex Young had been on a heater. This one start, it sounds like it's confirmation bias to your concerns. Is that a safe way to say that?
Yeah, it's a safe way to. I mean, part of it too is, yeah, I have to come up with interesting things to say every day for 6 months. You know, you kind of look for reasons to believe in a guy you may not necessarily believe in. Like I was saying with John Means, by the way. And I just wonder if, you know, I didn't personally pick up Alex Young anywhere. I just wonder if I really believed everything I was saying about him after his last start.
It's like a bad relationship. You're just like, nah, I knew all those things were wrong. Now I see it. You showed your true colors.
It's convenient there to say that now, right?
Yeah, exactly. How about the fringe pitchers? Maybe a little bit higher than fringe. Joe Musgrove versus Denelson Lamet. Musgrove went 5, 4 hits, no earned runs, struck out 7. 2 straight quality starts he had before that. He's got Seattle next week. And Lamet, not quite as good, went 5, 3 earned runs, but had 7 strikeouts as well. 7 of his last 8 starts, he's had 3 earned runs or less, but he's only got 2 wins in that time, and he is at Milwaukee. Musgrove or Lamet?
I'd be more likely to start Musgrove, who looks, I hesitate to say stable, but he has been lately. 4 of his last 5 starts, very solid. Seattle, great matchup, obviously. Lamet is going to be one of my big breakout candidates for next year. His swinging strike rate is off the charts. It was again in this start. He had, I think, 14 swinging strikes on like 74 pitches. But the fact the Padres only let him throw 74 pitches, that's kind of been the ongoing issue with him. 12 starts since coming off the DL, only 3 of them of 6-plus innings. And it's just hard to make use of him, all things considered. So instead of using him tough matchup at Milwaukee. I'm just going to start dreaming of what Dinelson Lamet could be next year.
Fringier pitching. Homer Bailey was 55% owned, went 5, 1 earned run, 3 strikeouts. The last that I saw, was that the final line? I will have to look. I believe that is the final line. And versus Brent, and he's got Kansas City next week, versus Brendan McKay, who only went 3 1/3, gave up 3 earned runs, 2 strikeouts, 64 pitches he ended up going in this game. And he's got what looks like some horrendous matchups this coming week. So dump McKay to play Bailey or move along?
Oh, yeah. I mean, McKay, I wasn't interested in picking him up after that last time out. I mean, it's like a 3-inning start, right? He looked good, but there have been so many red flags leading up to that. And already at a career high in innings, the Rays have been totally, totally non-traditional in the way they've used the rotation anyway. So I don't even know what a Brendan McKay start looks like. I don't know if he's making one. I don't expect him to be good. Bailey's been pretty good with the A's. Royals are good matchup. I mean, I'm not normally into the one start streamer thing, but if you are, then it certainly seems like a good case. I would start Bailey. I would not start him over Ronaldo Lopez, and I don't think I'd start him even over Alex Young against Miami. But he's in that same discussion.
Some news and notes that we don't want to leave the podcast without you knowing, but maybe you already know. Shohei Ohtani season donezo. Patella surgery in his left knee. He did that on Thursday. He is out for the season. It looks like it's going to be an 8 to 12 week timetable. Boy,
that's a long time. Yeah. That's a long time.
Lot of stuff following Shohei Ohtani. I wonder when we're going to have a season where there's not a bunch of stuff. I don't know if it's going to be this coming year.
Well, he's only been around 2 seasons. I don't know if that's hard to believe or not.
100% there's been stuff.
If he becomes injury prone guy, that's going to be harder for them to justify the two way situation, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But people are paying for it next year already. A couple others. Nick Senzel also out for the season, diagnosed with a torn labrum in his right shoulder. I mean, you know, you can move along.
It's not good either.
No, it's not good. MRI revealed that Justin Turner is dealing with a minor left ankle sprain. He was out of the lineup. He had an MRI on Thursday. Dodgers say that they are hoping he's going to be able to return this weekend in the Mets series. But if you were hoping or banking on Justin Turner this weekend, maybe don't. If you could write a headline at the beginning of the year and know you're going to see it at least 5 times in the season, it would be Rich Hill was forced to leave start. He was forced to leave his start against the Orioles after 2/3 of an inning after experiencing an issue with his left knee. It's officially been diagnosed as a sprained MCL. Ugh.
Yeah, so I think forget about him. And he hadn't gone on like an official rehab assignment either. So
they were only going to let him go 2 or 3 innings, I believe, in this game. Right. He didn't even make it out of 1.
Right. So it didn't look like he was going to be any sort of contributor in fantasy really anyway. This does open the door for Tony Gonsolin, who was the best of a few rotation candidates who followed Rich Hill in this game. It was like a bullpen game, but with former starters like Kenta Maeda and Julio Urias and Tony Gonsolin, who strong 3 innings.
It's like a runway models. They're just like, hey, here comes down to the line. Tony Gonsolin, 3 innings, 4 strikeouts, 1 earned run in this one. And he ended up picking up the win as well. And then last one, Craig Kimbrel. He threw a bullpen session on Thursday. He told reporters after that things went fine, but there's no elaboration. The thought process was that maybe he would return this weekend. I don't know. Everything is a little coy right now. I don't feel fantastic. It kind of comes back to that thing we were talking about earlier where it was like, would you drop Kimbrel or would you drop Will Smith to pick up Lugo? I'm not sure what we see from Kimbrel from the rest of this year, even though he said this bullpen went fine.
Fine. But yeah, that's all that's the way it was reported. He didn't elaborate. It was like, you know, a teenager being asked how school went. Fine. Like
Ben Roethlisberger being asked about Antonio Brown. Whatever. Just whatever. Fine. Doesn't matter.
That's yeah. Meanwhile, Will Smith sounds like he could return this weekend. So that's, yeah, it's not, I'm not feeling comfortable with Craig Kimbrell right now. I'm not feeling any better about someone else in that Cubs bullpen either, though.
Maybe any of them. In a not so great, but we'll take it, Lucas Giolito, 6 innings, 12 strikeouts, 1 walk, but 5 earned runs. Giolito cooling off a little bit as we step into 2020.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
I think there's a cool. He's being drafted very high, and that's fine. He's going to deserve it, but, you know, this is an important time.
4 of 7 with double digit Ks. He had 10. He had 12 strikeouts in this.
That's what I said. That's why I said it's a, oh, this is good, but eh. Like, it's the, you know, the girl with the meme where she takes a sip of the soda. She's like, ugh. Well, nope. That's what Giolito was in this game. Can I be trusted? Sorry.
Been going around lately.
It has. I threw you for a loop there. Can I be trusted? Caleb Smith, who went 5 2/3 of an inning. 3 earned runs, 4 strikeouts, but he's given up 14 earned runs in his last 4 starts, and he has Arizona up next. That's number one. Number two, we've got our boy Miles, who had 5 innings, 3 earned runs, 5 strikeouts. He's got the Cubs next, and you've been waiting for this one. Julio Teheran, 4 innings, 5 earned runs, 3 walks, 1 strikeout with Philly next. Can any of us be trusted?
I think the least trustworthy right now is actually the best pitcher of the three, I believe, in Caleb Smith, who, you know, looked like he may have gotten back on track last time out. It's just a really bumpy finish for him. And I think the innings has something to do with it. You know, he's had injury issues last year. He missed a lot of the season with an injury and just isn't particularly sharp at this point in the year, and pitches for Miami, so that doesn't help either. Teheran, I don't think I would necessarily bench him based on this, but unlike John Means, his ex-WOBA, Teheran's, is like in the 320 range. So, you know, still not high, but not great for a pitcher who you expect to hold down a rotation spot. And he's also fly ball prone, got burned by the home runs finally in this one. I think maybe Teheran had been having good home run luck up to this point. It's a little scary. Miles Michaelis, I think, is just become a boring pitcher. And as I keep saying, I mean that in the most positive way in this pitching environment.
Totally comes out. It comes out as a positive when you say it, Scott. You're like, it is boring, but it's I mean it positively. Totally comes out that way.
That's okay. Just because I'm not positive about pitching in general. That's what it is.
Yeah, no, you definitely made that clear. Thursday was a saved filled night. A lot of the big names were out there. We had Josh Hader getting his 31st save of the season. We had Chapman in there. I believe he got his 37th save. We had Kenley Jansen. Felipe Vasquez, though, fresh off of breaking Crick's hand, got his 28th save. Maybe the most interesting one to me, though, was Brandon Workman, who got his 12th save, 3rd in September. It's just the piecemealing that Boston has done and tried to work through and what they've been this year. Whenever I see Workman's name out there, that one always jumps out to me. We also had Leclerc get his 13th, and Ian Kennedy still dropping all of those saves. Any bullpen notes that you want to drop on us?
Yeah, I'm surprised Workman hasn't gotten a little more love because the piecemeal approach has pretty much ended. He has gotten, trying to review it real quick here. I don't know. He's basically been their full-time closer since the All-Star break. So, yeah, he deserves to be rostered in more leagues if you don't want to turn to what was that guy at the beginning when we were comparing Smith and Kimbrell?
And Seth Lugo.
Seth Lugo, yeah. I would go with Workman before somebody like Seth Lugo, who tends to throw like the 2-inning saves and isn't always available for the next chance, and sometimes they mix in Edwin Diaz. It doesn't appear, it's not as clear that it's Edwin. That's Seth Lugo's job.
I'm going to end us on this one email. I think this is a good one here. Fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. That's where you can send in your emails. Apologies. We had tons. We can't get to all of them. I will try to continue to circulate through them because we've got some good 2020 ones. which I want to hit. Though, Mr. Scott White, you are not here with us on Monday, correct?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm going to a wedding this weekend. I am flying on Friday the 13th, so it's a good thing I am not a superstitious person.
I was just about to say, Scott, you're going on Friday the 13th, huh?
Yeah.
You're not worried at all?
I just noticed that today. Oh, it's Friday the 13th tomorrow. Yeah. I don't fly that often. Maybe people who fly a lot, like, yeah, Friday the 13th, I do that all the time.
At least your cat isn't like a black cat also that was yelling at you earlier in the episode.
No, he's also flying.
Okay.
He's orange. Yeah.
Tabby. All right. So you will not be here, but worry you not. I have got a guest for you. A very good guest. A buddy of mine, Nick Pollock, pitcher list. If you guys have followed him, he's going to be joining me on the episode. So we will, we'll talk plenty of stuff, but I want to save the 2020 stuff for you and I. So when you are back for the Wednesday episode, I'm going to hit some of these 2020 things because I think there's a lot of good stuff. You've been hitting on it, but this is the final email real quick. This is Nathan from New Jersey. It was a really long email, but it's pared down to this. He goes, my opponent proceeds to say that he told an eliminated team that he liked Horner. The accusation here was that a playoff team told an eliminated team to pick up Nico Horner. That's the crux of this. So a team that's vying for a spot told a non-vied team to go pick up a player.
Okay.
So the playoff opponent says he just said he liked Horner and that the individual picked up on his own accord. What else is he going to say? They then proceed to say that I should have gone through my opponent and discussed it with him first rather than to throw out the accusations. I keep wanting to say acquisition. I don't know why. So there's an infight happening here between the playoff teams having the non-playoff teams do some nasty stuff here. So they're all yelling at each other. So he's got three things he would like to know that he should do here. One, should eliminated teams with no keeper or trade ramifications be allowed to make adds or drops? That's the first one real quick. Let's just do quick answers on this. Do you think
Yes. Yeah, my position has always been yes. People have made an investment in these teams. And they should be allowed to keep fighting right until the end. That's the way it's done in the actual game, you know, the actual sport. And, you know, for seeding purposes, you want teams to do that. You want them to fight right to the very end. You want your opponents to have a tough challenge as they're trying to position themselves for playoff seeding or whatever else. Yeah, they should be allowed to make add drops.
Now, reiterating again, because I don't think I did the best job here because I cut this really long email. It's the team out of it says that the playoff team told him to pick up Horner. So that's where the accusations are. Do you believe this was any type of collusion? I mean, it's almost impossible for you to guess, but does this sound collusion-y where the team who picked up Horner says, yeah, they told me to pick him up. And the other team's like, no, I didn't. How would you do this as a commissioner yourself?
I would probably ignore it as
Which
a commissioner myself. I mean, if the good team was telling the bad team, pick up this guy so that my opponents can't get him, I don't have a spot for him. Like if they were connecting the dots to that level, I could understand how that would not be good. And I don't even know that there was much you could do about it in that case, but if it was that overt, okay. But you know, There's no reason to believe it wasn't just a conversation. Yeah, I really like this guy. And so then the bad team looks at him and like, you know what? I think I might like him too. I'll pick him up.
Yeah.
Like,
just unfortunately, the guy that picked
happens all the time.
It's just the guy who picked up Horner is telling people, yeah, this guy told me to pick him up. But I am firmly, by the way, can you imagine?
Yeah, but what does that even mean? Like, yeah, he's really good. You should pick him up. Or is it you need to pick him up? So
yeah,
that
I think
my
that,
team can do better.
I think that's all part of it. I am firmly team never cancel trades. I'm not a veto trader, and it's got to be real collusion. Can you imagine, like, you're fighting about Nico Horner being collusion? His last one was, how much of a jerk is he for making this call out publicly?
I'm kind of over fantasy league drama in general. You know, I went through that phase, you know,
when you had
in
your
my
first
late
beer?
Teens, early 20s, where I thought it was the most important thing in my life, and you know, would burn bridges and friendships and risk blowing up the league, making a big deal over something that really isn't a big deal. So I don't know that it makes you a jerk necessarily. I just, you know,
get over it.
Put yourself in the other person's shoes and consider what's really at stake here.
I couldn't agree more. The drama is maybe the biggest thing that needs to be eliminated from fantasy leagues. Not wins, you know, not saves, none of that. It's the drama. Drop the drama, because fantasy is supposed to be fun. We're supposed to be having a ton of fun when we're doing this. When the fun is taken out, I think so should the fantasy. When you stop having fun, maybe you need to chill out on it. We like to have so much fun here. I'm going to try to have fun when you're gone, but I don't really know what I'm going to do. It's weird. You guys are like, I feel like the teenager where my parents are all leaving town and I get the house to myself. And there's no Adam. There's no Chris. There's no Scott. I'm all alone, and I invited one of my friends
going
over.
Off the rails. Yeah. Monday show, too. That's important. That's important stuff.
Well, Nick Pollock
People
is a very, very...
lineups for the championship.
He's a very, very smart guy if you guys follow him. Trust me when I tell you you're in good hands. You're in very good hands here, and we will be wishing you all the best in your fun travels there. No superstitions. But that is it. That's all we got for you. Good luck for everybody. It's championship time. Let's get it going. He is Scott White. Follow him on Twitter at CBS Scott White. Myself on Twitter at Is It The Welsh. Have a fantastic weekend, and we will talk to you again on Monday. Later.